Hey everyone, you're listening to the Scouting Podcast and my name is Tom Curran. Today's episode is a little informal chat I had with the team being Jake Entwistle and Hjell Davies, on their reflections from this season, 25-26. And when I say reflections, I don't necessarily mean reflections on the Premier League or the Champions League or even the ongoing World Cup. I mean reflections on their processes, so the way that they've developed how they're working at this mini recruitment team at Scouted day to day. We cover a bunch of things from ball carrying, which we predicted to be a big breakout topic of discourse over this year, to the subsequent rise of line breaking passes. We talk about how video scouting has changed and how we continue to balance it against data scouting. And just in general, how the team have improved their processes as they work together, and how we're trying to deepen that idea of operating like a mini club recruitment team. And then we touch on some wider metatextual stuff as well, like how youth development is changing, how the competition for signing young players is heating up, and which leagues the team is looking at and expects to be looking at as the summer develops and next season kicks off. A final note towards the end, something very strange happened with Hjell's microphone, wherein to Jake and I he sounded like an alien. It was terrible, but then back in the recording when I was listening back, he sounds perfectly fine. So Jake and I start to freak out laughing at him, and he sounds perfectly normal, and it sounds like we are pranking him, which we're not, I promise. But obviously we didn't know at the time it was going to come out fine in the recording, so I had him submit me a voice note of his final thoughts, so the episode closes on that. Finally, this conversation has been adapted into an article, which you can go and read for free on scoutedfootball.com. That's scoutedftbl.com. And of course, if you'd like to support our work and help us keep the lights on, you can take out a subscription there to read everything the team are doing and I'm doing. I've got a lot of really cool stories in the works. I mentioned in this episode that I've been to a club recently, so I've got a big deep dive coming on that, and just lots more great long-form storytelling on the recruitment process, analysis, and how it's all changing. That's it for me. I hope everyone enjoys this discussion. I hope you're saying stay safe and well. It's absolutely scorching here in London. Long may it continue. And that's it. I'll shut up. Enjoy the episode and stay well. I'd like to start then with a kind of general reflections on the season as a whole. Things you guys have noticed as you've been watching the game and going back and having a look. I've been through kind of stuff that we wrote during last preseason and early during the first few weeks of last season to see if I could pick out any themes. And one of the things that jumped out to me immediately was Ashwin wrote a piece called Revenge of the Dribbler in September, first week of September. And that was about how he expected ball carrying to become like the vogue skill set. And then, Jake, a few weeks later, you wrote about Noni Madueke going crazy against Nottingham Forest and breaking a load of carrying records. So I just wanted to get any general thoughts on how you guys have felt that has developed, ball carrying specifically. Have you seen it reflected in the games and the data that you're perusing over? How has it changed? Has it changed relative to your expectations? And then Jake, you raised on Slack that you had felt that you'd maybe over-indexed into ball carrying. And there was something really interesting in Ashwin's the end of Ashwin's analysis, where he said that, you know, tracking data isn't fully capable of capturing what a good carry can do to a defense yet. So anyway, that's a lot of stuff, but what have you been thinking about?
Well, that the point you made there about how maybe we've been indexing into those type of players subconsciously, or maybe they're the most obvious when you're watching football, is we're working on sort of a World Cup watch list that's obviously will be out by this time this is out. And one of the subsets of like the functions of a player, obviously it's, we've split the data into moving, which is off ball movement and being available to receive the ball, passing, obvious, physical stuff, which phase of play they're confident in or most they appear the most in, what they do when they're under like intense pressure, high pressure, and then carrying, which is sort of a synonym or adjacent word for just having the ball. So what do you do with it when it's at your feet? So a lot of the metrics there are like long carries forward, what speed are you carrying the ball at, things like that. And essentially a lot of the players that we picked for this watch list, they were sort of middling and average and looked good in some subsets of the other stuff, but nearly everyone we've picked is a standout in one of the carrying variants, which can be possession, so the ability to just retain the ball, hold the ball, stay on the ball, progression, which is obviously the long carries forward, penetration, which for the carrying stuff I indexed into like the speed at which they do it, so you're not just carrying the ball forward, you're attacking the forward space at high speed, which is obviously going to offset people more quickly. And then the final one is production, so like when you have the ball at your feet, how often does your team generate a shot from your possessions? So the point that I was making is that in terms of it being a valuable skill set, we're certainly seeming to enjoy players that carry that gene, if you will. But the problem that then it raises is, yes, the tactical meta is probably conducive to seeing more of these carriers because there's larger spaces when you do break through presses and things like that. But is there a danger of only focusing on this trait as something that stands out when trying to watch a match? And then it's just an interesting concept for scouts in general. So if you're sitting down to watch a match and you don't have a specific player to watch, you've got to really train yourself to not get completely infatuated by the person that's doing the big long carries, because that one action looks incredible and it is effective, but there are so many more things that are going on in that game. Did someone move to create the space for him that was really clever? Was there a particular tackle or interception before that launched him onto his carry? Was the pass that found him initially clever in itself? So it was more just sort of a, in terms of reflecting on stuff, is trying to train myself to, when watching games specifically, because I am very prone to falling in love with a ball carrier. So I don't know if Hyal, from watching many more games than I have and watching it from the scouting lens and trying to evaluate players and their potential, I wonder if that's a problem / something that you have to sort of correct yourself or check yourself doing at times.
I think what you're mentioning there is just context, isn't it? And the context in football is like ever changing. It's not like baseball where everything's set. That's the beauty of football. It's so nuanced. It's so intricate. One little movement here can define a movement elsewhere, like you were mentioning. So yeah, you've always got to have that in the back of your mind. And just to come back on to the theme of ball carrying, I think what gets everyone so excited about it is because it's so obvious. Because when you watch someone like Yandy Amande get the ball in his own half and drive it all the way up to the opposition box and get a shot off, like that is probably one of the most obvious skills that you can see on a football pitch. And it's not just sort of pigeonholed to the elite level. If you watch someone at Sunday League level, you'll see dribblers, you'll see ball carriers, people that can run with the ball. So I think that's why ball carrying has become so sort of ingrained in the way that, particularly from a data aspect, how that is the big, if this guy's really good at ball carrying, this guy must be a really good player. It's not as black and white as that. It's so much more contextualized. But yeah, just that is, I can see why ball carrying has become such a dominant feature in the modern game. And but again, I don't really want to look forward when we're going to be looking back on this podcast, but I think I can see it changing, that meta changing pretty much from this World Cup into next season already. I can see certain skills that will get prioritised more than ball carrying, and it'll be interesting to see how that pans out over the next months or so.
Like what? That's interesting.
I think progressive passing in terms of line-breaking passes will become a much more important aspect. I think it was an important aspect. I think it sort of phased out to this more ball-carrying-y, dribbly meta. But I think with the modern games going now, with the rise of the likes of Vitinha and that sort of that popular profile, I can see it shifting more back towards people that can get on the ball and play through lines as a passer rather than a dribbler. And I think with the way that the tactical landscape is shifting as well, I think that is probably the scale that will be more effective and more scalable as well.
Jake, you got any thoughts on that?
In terms of passing, well,
I'm just thinking about Elliot Anderson's just been, he's about to become £100 million player, and you did that profiling exercise on Anderson and Wharton earlier in the year. So I think maybe that would tie in a little bit into the discussion of like trying to remove team context noise and getting more granular with the profiles. So,
well, yes, in terms of passing, the Anderson stuff is different, because I think Kyle's talking about, well, Elliot Anderson can pass the ball in those pockets, but then his appeal is that he also then can carry the ball and can do it all, which we spoke about on the podcast with John, and why he would be the £100 million pound midfielder of this summer. But then the big discussion, and we're perhaps biased in, to an extent, in the fact that he was the cover star of Volume 2, but the reason why we've been so keen to do lots of Adam Wharton stuff is because we're all taken aback by how forward-thinking he is in every action that he does, and that comes to the fore most obviously again for him. His passes are obviously so good because he hits them with both feet first time, really quick, through every line you can imagine on the pitch. And again, doing these data exercises, he is the premium midfielder for both progressive passing, like breaking the first and second line, as well as penetrative passing, which breaking the last line. But then that brings me on to what extent is that his skill, and to what extent is he the best at it because he's asked to do it almost every time he gets the ball at Crystal Palace in a team that has one of the best off-ball running attacking midfielders / wingers / forwards in Ismaïla Sarr. Mateta is someone that is a big embodiment of the power forward archetype, in the sense that he runs in behind more than his size would have suggested he would have done if he was playing 10 years ago, or maybe people would not have realised he did it as much.
Adam told us, sorry to interrupt, he told us a really lovely anecdote about chatting to Brennan Johnson.
Yeah, that's
during
who's
a game.
Bring up.
Yeah, and how they just discussed where on the pitch the space was that Johnson was going to attack, and Adam was like, the minute I get the ball, I'm just going to put it there. I'm not even going to look, because I know Johnson's going to be running into that area.
Yeah, and Johnson, the anecdote was specifically about spacing behind, wasn't it? It wasn't like, yeah, I'll give it to me when I pull in. It was, I'm just going to run towards the box. And again, Brennan Johnson, for all of his perceived flaws, he's a very good off-ball runner and very good at attacking space. Whether he's efficient enough when he gets it is another question. But that's the thing now. So this passing, and what's a good exercise potentially then, is if passing is going to become the meta, or if ball carrying is the meta, either one of those, how do you take away the team context that says we ask this player to just run the ball all the time does that make him a good ball carrier, or does that just make him a voluminous one? And the same for passing is, Adam Wharton, we can see, is not just putting the ball into space. He is an excellent passer. Like, that's not in discussion. But when you're looking for Adam Wharton 2.0, or when you're looking for less obvious players, like we're talking about Adam Wharton, Morgan Rogers, Elliot Anderson, it's not hard to say that they're good players because they're playing in the Premier League and they're excelling. When you scout for younger players especially, how are you saying, right, this player is obviously just being asked to spam the ball into space? What indicators make him good at that, or what indicators make him just someone that's following instruction? And in a data context, I'm finding that really difficult to do. How do you separate Crystal Palace's play style from Adam Wharton's passing? The Athletic posted a good graphic about Bournemouth's 11, how especially the front five positions, everyone runs about 10-15% more high intensity distance than their positional peers in the Premier League. So when you're scouting Bournemouth players, to what extent are you scouting Iraola players, and to what extent are you scouting good players? Alex Scott, for example, is someone that we've again liked for a long time. He was a really good partner to Anderson in the under 21 Euros. What differences, or what skills are more obvious because of the Iraola system, and what ones are we not seeing as much that he can still do, is all of the questions that become extremely difficult to separate and ask, and finding those hidden powers, which definitely are difficult to find in data, which literally just tracks things that happen, is why video scouting is just so key to anything you do as well. So,
Xiao, any thoughts on how you're tackling that kind of stuff when you're watching people?
Yeah, well, I was just about to butt in there saying that what Jake is describing there is video scouting. It's more traditional scouting. It's more granular level scouting. I'm not massively into data. I do look into it, but like Jake was saying, it's impossible to find that sort of scalable skill in when it comes to data. But I think when it comes to more traditional scouting, where you're actually watching the mechanics of a player, I think that's where the value of it is, that granular level. Okay, how does this guy... So say now in the case of Adam Wharton, why is he so good? Is he so good because he plays every single pass? Well, not every single pass, but most of his passes. He's unbelievable at taking the ball and just zipping it through lines almost on one touch and little bits like that. You can probably get that from data with certain models and certain... I think I've seen a lot of people do that on Twitter already where you're sort of adding that little... extra nuance into it. But I think when you're watching a player, that's the sort of, those are the little traits that you notice, that you want to see, and those are the traits that are scalable. Like what Adam Wharton's doing now, he was already doing at Blackburn. I'm not sure whether that comes out in the data, but it definitely comes out in the eye test, where okay, I've seen Adam Wharton take the ball on the half turn and just wrap it through a line countless times with Blackburn, and so it's not a surprise that he's doing it for Crystal Palace. And that is the beauty of it. That is the yin and yang. That is the sort of the harmony of, okay, I can see that this guy's really good at progressive passes on the data, but what sort of progressive passes are they? Is he hitting them, say now, if he's playing a big switch out to the right wing, is it quite loopy? Does it take a while to get there, or is it driven into the player's feet and it sets up the next action really quickly rather than having to take another touch to settle it down? Like little bits like that. That is where that's the harmony of data scouting and video scouting, and that is where the nuance and the granular detail is so important, I think.
This is definitely in danger of becoming predictions rather than reflections, but I think they're kind of tied together. And I guess I want to ask a more general question about how our understanding of that yin and yang has developed this year, about whether you guys have learned anything new about how you work together during processes where you're trying to find a player. You know, I remember this year very clearly the, I guess it was towards the end of last season or over the summer, last season, the Yandy Amande thing, where, remind me how that, was it Jake, you spotted him first in doing something crazy in the data and then?
Yeah, so that's an example of what Hal's saying of like, all I said was, there's an 18-year-old kid that's played, I've never heard of before, who's now, because that was when FB Ref was available and it was just shot creating actions. So this is an example of a shot creating action defined by FB Ref was just the two preceding events to a shot. And you could get awarded for two. So you could dribble past a player and then pass it a yard and get two actions. Or you could take on five players, but you'd still only get the two that preceded the one shot. So all I said was he's creating a lot of shots for a bad team. He must, like, it's basically like, let's check out what it is. So the process, I think, where data will help is Cal's always watching games and spotting players through the eye test, which is always going to be the best way. I guess what I'm trying to do is trying to reverse engineer these skills as robustly as possible so that I can then search in countries and leagues that we either can't watch live or we can't watch quickly or consistently to say, like, I don't know how good these progressive passes are, or I don't know how good these ball carries are, but there's someone that's doing 50 of them at a time at the fastest speed I've ever seen. And then what we trust Hiao to do is be able to say it's literally because the league is rubbish, or he would never get that much space anywhere else. Or in Diamande's case, it was, I think instantly it was a little message pops up in Slack, yeah, Diamande is good. And when Hiao says that, it's usually a sign that they're going to become the player that he's become. So I'm fully aware that data should never and is never going to find players, and that should be the answer. But I think I'm getting quite good at being able to look at the key indicators that should at least tell you you need to watch them, and then there should always be a final verdict on that.
Is anything, I know it's quite difficult to remember exactly when things happened, but do you think anything's changed in the way you guys work together this year? How do you think it's developed?
Well, I was going to say, it's interesting that you bring up that Yandy Amande process again. I think it's something that going forward, we definitely need to do more of. We probably didn't do it as much in that sort of really focused level this season for numerous reasons, that are a lot of them outside of our control. But I think going forward as a team, I think that is definitely something that I'd love to do more of, because it is... the recruitment process. It is, okay, Jake Swiss found this guy on the data. He's flagged a number of key points for us. I dig into the video. I have a look. Okay, yeah, Yandy Amande, he's really good. He ended up going to Leipzig like 2 weeks later. Mm-hmm. And again, I think we're not reinventing the wheel here. This is what clubs do, and this is the process that found Diamande. I think RB Leipzig are on record of saying, yeah, this guy hit so many key performance indicators for us as a profile. We had one look at him and he was immediately our man. So we're like a little club that are operating in and of itself and just repeating what has been the process across the world for the past 10 years or so.
Sure. Before we move on, is there anything else you guys want to talk about in terms of, like, Jake, is there anything you wanted to add on your filtering team context out of the data noise, anything on processes?
Well, the big thing that I want to work out on that is, like, I don't know, whenever I say it out loud, I always feel like it's too much, but like the little framework that I'm trying to work on when I scout a player, and again, I'm very much becoming fully fledged like data scout, as in I try to watch matches and try to watch these games, but I'm spending a lot of time trying to also get these quote unquote perfect. But if you have like style, then effectiveness, then efficiency, and then responsibility, I feel like that is a really solid framework to apply to like when you see a metric. So using progressive passes, style would be what percentage of their passes are progressive passes. Adam Wharton, for example, is really high ratio on that. Effectiveness is how often do they play the pass, or even you could just say how many successful line breaks a game. So again, someone like Rodri will do lots of them a game, but it's because he has 100 passes to do it. So his style wise isn't as high as Wharton, who's doing effectiveness and also high proportion. But then there's still team concept things that are applying that. Rodri's doing 100 passes because he plays for Man City in the centre of midfield at the height of their control through possession phase. So then you look at efficiency, and that's again success rate. So when they're trying the passes, can they just hit the same target all the time? But then responsibility is basically a way to look at all of that, the first three, or the first two specifically, because efficiency again is cut and dry, although there is context. But anyway, responsibility is my way of trying to then say how much is style and effectiveness influenced by this team context. And again, as someone that's still learning ways to use the data to modify it and interrogate it in different ways, because you always usually get a player data set and a team data set, it's hard at the moment to get that responsibility part of the framework absolutely nailed. But a lot of the work that I'm going to be doing this season, because of what has happened throughout the season just gone, is looking at how to evaluate that play, that team style, on a player's output. And again, that will help find more players that are perhaps hidden, because yes, you can find a really good ball carrier in a team. There's a Egyptian winger that's going to be at the World Cup, who's French born. I always get his name wrong, but it's Hassan, I think. Hassan Hussein. He is basically a one-man carrying machine for Real Oviedo, who finished bottom of La Liga. So they have got a really good dribbler that's probably the only dribbler in their team, and they just give him the ball and get him to go up the whole pitch. Now, he's obviously good at dribbling, but the reason that he's beating more players in possession than anyone in La Liga, and the reason he's got more progressive carrying distance, is because he's playing for a bad team that rely on him to do any progression. So as a scout, you'd watch that and be like, or he looks so good on data. He would look good when you watch his individual carries, because he'd be beating five players. But again, the thing that I'll never be able to capture in data, I don't think, is whether that would then scale to a different environment where he is positioned higher up the pitch. He's not receiving as deep. He doesn't have as much pitch to run into. There's not as many players in the gauntlet that he needs to beat. And then it looks at the efficiency of his end product. And Madueke again provided a nice example against Costa Rica. Excellent running behind, really good skill to go around a keeper. That last action will go down as a shot, which again, he's good at getting. The run will be very dangerous. The touches will be good. But when you watch it, you have to score that. And those flags, again, is something that I doubt will ever truly, truly come up in the data. But yeah, responsibility is the biggest thing that I've wanted to attack for this season, because of everything that I looked at last season.
And those frameworks they help you build archetypes as well. So maybe we could talk a little bit about how that project has developed this year. Because I feel like from my perspective, it's been less about widening the scope of the different archetypes and adding new ones, and more about refining processes, getting them more granular and accurate. Is that fair?
Yeah, definitely. I was going to say we've probably got like the midfield ones, and again, because midfield is everywhere and and anywhere you want. The midfield archetypes, I feel like, are the most robust and the most obvious. Although Pathfinder was initially a fullback one, but there's five that are very obvious. But even then, finding them within data is the whole process this season, as we've had more access to more data it initially got removed. So then how do you develop archetypes with nothing? And then we've recently been given more access, and as more metrics are available, each time I get a new suite available, I have to look at all of the metrics, interrogate which ones could be valuable for this profile, rebuild the profile. So I think we're getting in a position now where I'll be able to do that and have sort of a couple for each area on the pitch. But even the power forward, for example, I read back at the introduction to that, and it's quite, from data wise, it's quite limited. It's literally just runs in behind. But again, watching obviously Jokeres this season, who was the poster boy of that prompted me to try and evaluate, okay, is the power forward, is he even a power forward in the sense that he's able to bulldoze through people and get shots away, or is he more of an outlet that spins, runs hard, and doesn't have the actual ability to be the full-blown power forward that he looked like at Sporting? So it's trying to find new metrics beyond just he runs in behind, which again flags a lot of people like Brian and Mbeumo, Ismail Assar, as I mentioned, like they're not power forwards, they run in behind, they create depth. So just refining the archetypes like that into finding this sort of Terminator-like striker that can run in behind, does it at speed. That I think, like, that's an example of an archetype which I think was very exciting to develop at the start, but since I've learned more, I know less about what that looks like in the data, which is always the way. And again, in terms of like what I'd like to do this season, is I'd like to get even more cues from Kiao about like what are valuable skills. Some of the best definitions we have of archetypes are from Kiao's pieces, because they're born out of watching players. So I think the more we can get from him, the more different players he can watch, then I can sort of take his football literate definition and try and turn that into data, rather than trying to turn data points into these fantasy names that I've been developing. So,
Xiao, any reflections on archetypes from this year and how they fit into your process and whether that's changed?
I think obviously this is very much Jake's baby. I'm sort of like his little consultant on the side that he comes to now and again, and I sort of, as you mentioned there, I do sort of influence it to an extent, but this is very much Jake's thing. So what I've been trying to do over the past season is sort of familiarize myself with what each archetype does, so I can get better at, okay, when I watch this player now in the under 17 Euros, I can flag this guy as like a potential developer, as a potential roadrunner, little bits like that, which just, again, I think sort of validate the process where, okay, Jake's built this profile of a player. Can I spot that pretty much from the off? I think that's where I've been trying to improve myself. It's difficult because you sort of start second guessing yourself, yeah. and it's all, again, as with everything in football, it's very contextualized, it's very nuanced. One role in one game can completely flip to another role in another game, or even in different phases of play. So I think, again, that's something where we have to sort of stress test it and refine it and whittle it away, perhaps, and like really drill down to what the essence of each archetype is. And again, I think that's just as much on me as Jake in terms of, yeah, can I spot what this player is from the off? Because otherwise, there's not really point in having these profiles. If it takes 10 games for you to sort of spot what this profile is as an archetype, then it doesn't really work as a concept, I don't think. I think just getting that where it's like bang, yes, he's a so-and-so, he's a berserker, he's a little bits like that. I think that's where I've been focusing my effort this season in terms of archetypes.
And this is, you've mentioned something there that's important, is data will tell you what role they're playing currently. So when we do the scores and when we cross-reference it with data, that's still only telling you what they're doing. That what I need to really like nail down, like you said, I almost need to not try and make them through data first. I'm really confident with like the superpower / like skill set stuff we have. So if you see someone that's fast and is good at ball carrying, they might not be a roadrunner or whatever in that particular context, but we should be able to say their archetype is this, because that's what that skill set throughout watching seasons and seasons of football has been conducive to. Whereas if they're someone that can consistently just get shots, that is the skill that should be celebrated and should be that. You might go back to the data and they might, oh, they're playing as this platforming midfielder at the moment or whatever. But if they've shown a sort of proclivity for just shooting and generating opportunities in tight spaces, I need to get better at like saying it almost doesn't matter what the data says when we choose an archetype. This is what we think they are, and what the skills that you're seeing, like we said, for progressive passing. Like you said, Wharton was doing that at Blackburn. So whether it does show in the data or not, Wharton is always going to be our pathfinder. Or, and again, whether he's the same as Trent Alexander-Arnold is now, like you said, you second guess yourself, because pathfinder was meant to be the progressive passer that just consistently batters lines. But Trent does it in a more reserved quarterbacky style. Wharton does it almost 360 degrees. So do we now need to evolve it, and that the Wharton's quick passing is quick penetrative passing is a new archetype born out of that concept? And the big thing is not being, as I said, from my perspective, the big thing is not being led down the, oh, the data says he's this, that means he isn't what I thought. But we need to trust ourselves to say, like, the power forward is someone that attacks the last line of defense, runs hard and shoots hard. So Erling Haaland, for example, doesn't actually get to be very power forwardy at Manchester City because they're so dominant. So a previous index I had meant he never came up as that, but I feel like Haaland is the embodiment of it. So it's me finding a balance between capturing the essence of what Haaland does better in data, but also not being so dissuaded by if I don't necessarily see these players being what we think they should be. Because at the end of the day, we're trying to say this player is good at this. If you bought him and made him do this more, it would be better, rather than saying this is what he's doing now, you should continue doing that.
I think, just to butt in again, just to sort of flesh out that point, I think it boils down to what's a player's instinct. What is their instinct on a football pitch? So does he want to come to feet and receive it and turn? Does he want to stretch into space? Does he want to stay on the ball and find a solution? Or does he want to drop it off and make another angle? I think that's what it comes down to. Does he want to go and squeeze a striker from behind? Or does he want to sit off a bit more and be a bit more retrospective and a bit more stealthy as a centre-back? I think it comes down to instincts. And I think this is something that's really popped up in my timeline, Twitter timeline, this season. I think it's Sonzo. Tom, what's his real name?
Callum Saunders.
There we go. I know him as Sonzo on Twitter, but I think he's a guy that's really got that term in my head, that instincts. I did it subconsciously. I do it as a coach. I build my teams on, okay, if this guy wants to come to feet, I've got to pair him with someone that wants to stretch him behind on the last line. Little bits like that. You do it subconsciously, but to have it sort of verbiated in that way as, yeah, you're looking for players' instincts. You're looking for, okay, and if his instinct is to stretch into space, that means that, okay, you can sort of profile him as someone as like a power forward, someone that you can, so that's what you're looking for. You're looking for instincts, and it all boils down to that. What does a player want to do on any given moment on a football pitch? And that's what you're looking for. And you can see it in data. You can definitely see it in the eye test on video. And that is what you're looking for, instincts.
Maybe you need to change. This is why these podcasts are good, because that, again, that's why we need to, again, we didn't lose our way. Like, everything we've been doing is good, but that's in the same way that responsibility and for data wise is removing that. I think trying to pair up these functions with that's why I split them into like possession means is usually the instinct is to come to feet, be safe, get the ball first and then do stuff later. Whereas like for movement, for example, split into possession, which is coming short to get the ball. Then you've got progression, which is moving ahead of the ball, but not breaking the last line. Penetration, which is breaking the last line. And then production is just a measure of like how many times that gets generates a shot. So we are all discussing the same things. And I think just verbalizing that, as you said, to say when we build an archetype, you're building the superpower in terms of attribute, like when they get the ball or what do they do best and most effectively, but also what's the sort of direction of travel, as you said, instinct of how they're looking to affect that particular action. So I think that's something that, again, maybe if you replace style with instinct, it becomes even more sort of vivid when discussing a player's skill set.
I think there's something here about understanding and constantly referring to what we're trying to achieve with these in terms of like real actionable problems that we're trying to solve in the recruitment process. Because something that I remember from our discussion with John, Jake, and I think this talk is reminding me of it again, is trying to capture everything about a player in one profile is near impossible. And so coming back to kind of understanding, okay, an archetype is meant to be an at-a-glance thing that helps solidify decision-making process really quickly, like that, right? And then it doesn't need to capture their entire the whole spectrum of things that they could do on a football pitch. It's just understanding how much information do we have to capture to make a decision more confident, or be able to make it more quickly. Are you thinking about that as you continue to build these? Because we are putting these ideas into the hands of clubs and professionals now who are going to use them for that purpose.
Yeah, as I said, I think we've always done that. I think the if you read all of the, I love going back to read the stuff we've written, and it's a good reminder of like, wait, actually, no, this was a good idea at the time. Like Hiao said, you start to second guess yourself, but when you go back to the original, you're like, wait, no, the basis of this is really clear. I've just got muddled because I've got too much information. But the Morgan Rogers, for example, is a player that constantly makes you second guess yourself and makes you annoyed that you can't capture everything, because I spoke about like his ball carrying, whatever. And again, when you read the Berserker stuff back, it's all about instinct. It's all of it is about when I get the ball, I'm going forward and trying a shot or trying a pass. That's the Berserker-y nature of his instinct. So I think it's just having clarity on it and making it extremely obvious. And like you said, saying this archetype, it doesn't need to capture all of this, but the essence of this is someone that is constantly trying to be dangerous, is constantly trying to be progressive, is constantly trying to retain the ball. All of that stuff we can make even more obvious so that it is easier to understand. But I think the feedback we've had from archetypes, the work that we've done on it, Hiao and I have both written pieces on them and developed our own styles. When you read back everything, I think that always has been clear. It's just the ability to constantly remind yourself of that. And when developing new ones, it's being really clear that that should be the process, is start with the instinct, then start with the skill that marries that up, etc.
Okay. Let's, yeah, I want to chat a little bit about maybe more general world football stuff, in terms of, has anything changed with the markets you've been watching this year? What kind of leagues have you been focusing on? What trends have you seen emerge? What do you expect to continue next year? How has your football watching experience in terms of where you're looking and why changed over the past season, if it has?
I think this season's just sort of cemented the little tagline that we've been saying for the past 2 or 3 years, that Africa is the future of football. I think in the past week, there's been a really obvious transfer that has sort of kicked that to another level. Zadek Johanna going from AIK in Sweden to Brighton for 28 million, a league record fee, a Scandinavian record fee. And he'd only played about 10 games in Swedish football, coming straight out of Nigeria, of a Nigerian academy. And he's gone from 750 grand to 28 million in the space of 6 months. Like, that is obscene. And it just drills down for me that Africa has so much untapped potential. And everywhere that you look, every sort of nation or league or club that has sort of tapped into it to an extent, probably nowhere near to the level that they'd like to. But even in those, like AIK are a great example in Johanna, the Scandinavian clubs do great work in terms of finding and building those relationships with agents and academies and clubs out there to get the pipeline of players in. And Jake recently wrote about Skill Corner, wrote about wrote using Skill Corner data, how Nigerians are becoming more and more prevalent in Czech football, and how Czech clubs are finding that edge in the transfer market in giving those players a pathway, and they're sending them on for huge profits. That is the future of football. Africa is the future of football, and there's so much more to come. It's obscene how much more there is to come. It's practically limitless. But it's just about having those pathways, those opportunities for players to come through into European football, show themselves and get these sort of moves. So I think that's definitely been probably the biggest thing again for me. It's been probably one of my favourite themes of the past 3 or 4 years. If you follow what we do at Scouted, I've driven a lot of that. To go into a more sort of niche aspect, I've really enjoyed watching Polish football in the past 3, 4, 5 months. It was actually Stephen Gnawas that mentioned it to me initially, and I was sort of a bit sceptical. I was a bit like, oh, maybe Stevie's having me on a bit here. But I went to watch a game.
First time.
I went to watch a game. I think it was Jagiellonia against Lech Poznan. Top of the table clash, so obviously you're expecting something, but it sort of exceeded my expectations in terms of the tactical level, the technical level, the athletic level. I think Poland is increasingly becoming a league that clubs need to keep an eye on, not only in terms of how they're starting to produce more and more domestic talent through their systems. Oskar Piatuszewski would be a great example of that this season, gone from Jagiellonia to Porto and being a standout. He looks like a £50 million player already, and Porto got him for, what, £8 million. So you've got that aspect of it, but also their recruitment is becoming ever more diverse, ever more intelligent. And for me, Poland's becoming that sort of mid-tier league where, okay, the smart clubs, get your eyes on that league, keep an eye out on what's happening there, not in terms of just players, in terms of like tactical trends as well. I think there's a lot to be said of Polish football, and I've been really impressed, and I'm really excited to go into next season and watch more of it.
I think there's something really interesting about the dissemination of information, in terms of like the place where these ideas are developing is free to access for everyone. And so you'll see at every level, people are now talking about tactics in the way that they do at the top level. And for example, I was at a club last week and I was talking to one of the elder statesmen of the club, one of the football guys who was has been a coach for more than 25 years and he's still online looking for the latest developments and to see what he can translate to his work. And I think it's really fascinating to watch a lot of the unfancied leagues gradually catch up and for these very high level ideas to be implemented everywhere, including, I'm sure, at your team, Cal, which I definitely want to dig into further next year. One thing I wanted to jump off on very quickly was on your points about Africa. Again, at this club, unspecified as of now, visit last week. I was talking to the head of recruitment, and the club is quite renowned for doing good work in Africa. And they have one scout in Africa for the whole continent. And they were also talking about how they are having to go, because this is a small club in the scheme of resources, European resources. They're having to look younger and younger and younger and take more and more risks, because players at 17, 18 are already so exposed. So Hiao, I wondered if you, old Jake, if you guys had any reflections on, we've certainly seen this year more players break into first team football young. We've just written about Kenneth Eichhorn. Everyone knows Max Dowman. Lamine Yamal is 31 years old, by my estimation. He's been around for so long. So any reflections on just the general race to find these kids younger and younger, how difficult that is to spot, and how it might affect the markets moving forward?
Well, just I'll jump in quickly and just say, like, the younger players get, the more unlikely it is that they'll have the data profile that I know there are platforms that have produced their own data for underage tournaments, but for Africa, for example, the Yohana example, he wouldn't have even been playing in a league that was covered by data. I very much doubt it. I don't know that for certain, but so then it becomes, the race also becomes like, how can data providers provide data or at least footage for these leagues so you can watch these younger players? But then it does become quite, grim's the wrong word, but having to focus on such young players is a reflection of the industry that's not perfect.
Well, I didn't say it there, but that, because I didn't want to overcomplicate them, but I do think a lot there might be some kind of moral and ethical reckoning coming with all this, which is far too large a question for us to discuss now, but I wanted to mention
football. Well, football scout, like, as in, I think from a data and collection thing, that is definitely ethical. But people have always scouted players at Sunday League, like under 10s. Like, that's part of the traditional route, which
sure
might see that come back. And it's whether they then get put in different countries now and watch games there. That's
well, it's just, for me, it's just how quickly they're becoming financial assets. And
yeah,
at what age. That worries me. Yeah, just while I throw that spanner in the works.
Yeah, if you were removing all moral and ethical debates, the younger a player gets, for reasons so obvious, it becomes more, they do become more difficult to find or also like validate with external data or whatever. But in terms of the general trend of players getting younger, it's so obvious. I think it was the start of this season when Dalma made his debut that I did the teenagers taking over thing and was just talking about how young everything's getting. And then I followed that up with the French centre-backs thing. They've always been a popular sort of asset, to for want of a better term. But they're getting sold at like Jacquet's gone already. Gagnon at Lon will go, and 17-year-olds are coming in to take their place, and soon the 17-year-olds will be sold, and you will have these 14-year-old kids that have just come off the Parisian sort of local leagues that will just be played, and it feels like it's going that way. So yeah, I think what you said about clubs taking more risk is the key. Like, players are, you're not actually allowing them to amass enough data. With Johanna, obviously now he's gone to Brighton, it's fine to say that he was included in a pilot we did of our product of trying to identify players that are going to become those £30 million players. And we couldn't do the data report on him because he didn't have the usual threshold, but he was already in talks to move for £30 million. So from what I do, it becomes difficult, and it becomes about access. And again, there's conversations of how much can you charge for matches of under 16 games. That feels like something that would, as you said, warrant further discussion. But watching those players and going to watch games has always been a thing. So I don't know how you navigate it, Hiao, when you're... I'm interested if you... how you're... like, the future of football is Africa, but do you still have a direct link to watching those players, or are we relying on the... we're still relying on them moving over here and watching them as quick as possible almost?
Obviously, there are platforms where you can get African football access to it. But I think in the case of Africa, it's more about building, particularly for clubs, it's about building relationships out there with people who can really facilitate these sort of moves. I think I'd probably estimate about 80% of all the Africa to Europe moves are probably facilitated by that sort of relationship with an agency, with an aid particular agent who has influence out there. I think that is how you get into Africa. That is how you can really tap into it. Obviously, the ideal scenario would be you build a sort of system like Right to Dream have with FC Nordjylland, and you have like an academy that's in place, and you're picking up all the best local talent and building them through your game model coaching and then you bring them over. But that is pretty much impossible. Well, I wouldn't say it's impossible, but clubs are reticent to do it considering how much time and patience that would need to implement. But it's difficult. It's definitely something that I think African leagues need to improve at in terms of platforming their own talent. They don't do it anywhere near enough. If you speak to people who are experts in African football, they say the same. They're very frustrated in how their leagues are branded and how their players are looked after and treated. Because the thing is, these profits should be going to the African clubs that develop these players, not the sort of middlemen that are intelligent and smart enough to get in on it. But these profits should start filtering down into African football and developing African football.
Okay. I have a kind of a quick fire round at the end. But before we do, I just wanted to ask anything we've not touched on from the year that you'd like to reflect on?
My main points have been covered, I think.
Yeah, same.
Okay. Well, I didn't ask you to prepare this, so I appreciate there's going to be some scrambling. But I just thought it might be interesting, now that the full season's gone, to look briefly back at Scouted 50 from last year and pick out anything that jumps to mind. I think it's pretty... It's always such an interesting experience for me because obviously you guys drop me this list of 50 players every year and I have not got a clue who any of them are, aside from like the top 10. And then a year later, I'm always like, oh yeah, that guy is now like a key figure in international football. May I direct your attention to number, where is he? 45 out of 50 is one Ryan Vitor, who is now the talk of the Premier League. Also quite far down, number 41, Saeed Elmala. A little bit higher up, Jake, from your World Cup preview, Bazoumana Touré, who's about to start for Côte d'Ivoire.
That's a Yao pick, that is. That's the Diamande before Diamande.
Any other players jump out that you have been following this year that have maybe met expectations, exceeded them?
Yeah, well, I was going to say, it is funny that usually the sort of the biggest risers are those ones lower down because obviously it's gone to a vote. So Ryan in Brazil, not many people had watched or knew. People knew about him, but like the people we'd asked probably weren't as experienced in what he could do. And Elmala was very much, hadn't even played top flight football. And that was from, like, I didn't put him in my vote because I know Hyal was big on him from the Euros that he played in, that under 19 Euros where he was in our team of the tournament and stuff. But you never think that they're going to make the impact sort of he did and be linked with all of these moves that early. I think there's a couple of misses, the wrong word, but it's funny to see what the hype is at the start of the season. Obviously the big one, Kader Mate going to Saudi Arabia was sad. Mm-hmm. I would have liked to see how he developed. But I think it is a very good list, this year's one.
Yan Diamande was number 20.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's 20. Lennon Miller is one that's probably not... That move didn't work out for him. Again, Hyal's probably the person to ask. I'm just skimming through it and thinking.
I think Lennon Miller was...
What are your thoughts?
He was a bit... Had he gone to...
Hang on.
Bundesliga...
Your mic's gone.
Oh, fuck.
Crazy. Yeah, try again. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Lennon Miller is...
Nope. That was so funny.
It's even worse.
What? What's going on?
You got your phone again.
All right, everyone. as promised, here are Hyal's closing thoughts on Scouted 50, delivered via WhatsApp voice note. I hope they're good.
Yeah, it's interesting that Jake mentioned Lennon Miller, 23rd out of 50 in our Sky 50. Had he gone to a Belgium, a Bundesliga, even a Championship, I think he probably would have had a better reflection of a season, but that's not to say that he hasn't, what he's done at Udinese this season hasn't been bad. I think he's played a lot of football, and to do that so young in a league like Serie A, where he's a complete newcomer, is there's something to be said for that. Yan Diamande, 20th. Again, I don't think anyone really expected him to have the absolute lights out breakout season that he had. I personally expected him to have a good season, but not to the point where he's probably going to go to Liverpool for upwards of 100 million this summer. But he has that profile, which is just so alluring, so the be all and end all to an extent. Just above him, Calvi Ranki. Had a good season under the radar in Denmark. He should be going somewhere this summer. And then, yeah, the top 10. I think the top 10 is pretty good. Chan Ozun started really well, probably faded away, but Eintracht Frankfurt did that as a team, so you can't really begrudge him that. Joshap Chiampong, I think he's probably the one on this whole list that probably has the most breakout potential for next season. I think if you put him in the right team, whether that's at Chelsea or elsewhere, I think this is a guy that can go to the highest levels very quickly and become one of the most popular players anywhere in Europe. He is a unicorn defender. What he does with and without the ball, for his size, for his just mobility and what he is technically, unbelievably talented on both sides of the ball. I think there's so much potential there with him. And if I was going to pick another bolter out from down the list for next season, I think Hevaldo Reid at Feyenoord, had he not had so many injuries, he'd be much higher. He'd be much more talked about this summer for a big move. But I think that is something that might just plague his whole career. He might be one of those players that has those niggling injuries that sort of, not, I wouldn't say cap his potential, but certainly tethers him. But yeah, if I was going to pick out one more to think about this summer, going into next season, I'd probably go Vasilije Kostov from Crvena Zvezda. He's had a really strong season in Serbia. I've started to see him get some links to some really big clubs this summer. I think he's a talent as that sort of attack-minded. He is almost a do-it-all midfielder, but he is a bit more forward-thinking, getting up around the box to create and get shots off and arrive into areas. There's really good goal scoring out. So I think he's one that I'd probably pick as the breakout for next season, as the bolter, as the one that you've got to keep an eye out for this summer in the on Fabrizio Romano's timeline. So yeah, but on the whole, I think it was a really good list. Again, to blow around trumpet, I think these lists are quite hard to do. Because you start to second guess yourself, you start to fight your own demons to an extent about, do I really want to pick this player? But I think on the whole, it's been another strong list.
All right, thank you, Xiao, and thank you everyone for listening. Go well in fighting your own demons. I hope it's not too violent. Bye.